right, welcome back, everyone. It's been a while, but Rec, welcome to another episode of the Sierra Nova podcast.
Yeah, known as the Nova Files.
Yeah, it's been a while. I was like, wait, what's the name of our podcast again?
Yeah.
No, I'm recovering from COVID, so like my brain's not fully back to 100%.
Ouch. How are you feeling though?
Oh, honestly, much better compared to last time. It's like, how do I put this? The first time I had it, it was like I was fucking dying, right?
Wow.
Like, I had joint pains. I had pain everywhere. I couldn't sleep. I was in so much pain.
Oh, God.
Plus, you know, you have the coughing. You have the general, like, being sick. But yeah. This time, I just, like, I had, like, more flu symptoms. So, like, I had a stuffed up nose, a headache. I was tired all the time, but I didn't have a cough. I didn't have as much loss of appetite. So, like, just the first 2 days, I didn't have any appetite. But after that, I was back to normal eating-wise.
Wow. It's no joke.
Yeah, no. It, like, was in and out of my system in about a week. Like, it's a much milder variant to the ones from last year.
Yeah.
That, or just, you know, from having vaccines, you know, just was a lot easier to handle.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're certainly sounding better.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like we should have done this last week, but I was just, like, not having it mentally. I was like,
dude, it's all right. It's all right. I understand. Believe me. I've been there, so trust me. Don't worry about it. But
yeah.
The fact is, we're here this week, and we're here to talk about Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So, like, you were telling me about Strange New Worlds, and then I got introduced to Strange New Worlds through the Lower Deck crossover, and then I watched the musical episode, and I'm like, you know what? Let's give this show a shot. And I think I marathoned the entire first two seasons, right?
Yeah.
I marathoned the first two seasons, like, in a weekend, and I liked it a lot. There's some things I like, some things I don't like as much. Like that, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we also got to talk some Lower Decks. We're one episode away from the season finale.
Yeah, it has been a blast this season so far. Just, you know, just for the promotions of our characters. Mariner's just starting to get over the fact, you know, that she can't get demoted because the commander has this much faith in her.
I can't let you fail. I believe in you too much.
Yeah.
Oh, who wouldn't love a boss like that? Exactly. But yeah, no, we'll definitely talk about Star Trek as the main topic. But before that, how about we just go general over, like, stuff in geekdom, things that we've been up to.
So sure.
What have you been watching, getting into, or hearing?
I have been rewatching Invincible because season two is coming out this upcoming week. So I've been preparing for that. I also watched the Adam Eve episode, you know, that they released obviously before season two. And I love that episode because it's such an interesting take on the character, especially on the origin story, her origin story.
Oh, no, I definitely got to give that a watch. I'd completely forgotten about Invincible. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I know it's going to sound really stupid, but I'm also really looking forward to apparently they're putting an Omni-Man into the new Mortal Kombat game.
Yes, I heard about that.
Yeah, and like I saw the animations for his fatalities. I'm like, oh, this is good.
Yeah.
This is good. And I'm just waiting because, like, I think the last DLC character is going to be Homelander from The Boys.
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting to recreate the whole, like, death battle of Homelander versus Omni-Man. You've seen that one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic.
It's cathartic.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. Like, Homelander is such a freaking bully. But, like, yeah. they put it best. In the world of The Boys, he's a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you compare Homelander to things like in DC or Marvel or even Invincible, and he's going to get owned.
Oh, yeah.
That's power scaling for you. But speaking of Superman types, did you watch the new show, My Adventures with Superman?
Yes, I did. I loved it.
Fuck yeah, me too. It was really good.
Yeah, it was very light. It didn't shy away from, you know, the typical, okay, is she gonna find, is she gonna, you know, not see that he's Superman, all that. And I have to tell you, she took some very bold moves, especially trying to, you know, say that you are Superman, especially jumping off a building. I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I understand what you're doing here, but what if he wasn't Superman?
Okay, but let's be honest. That is like a total Lois Lane move to do.
Yeah.
No, but I honestly think that is one of the best Superman cartoons I've seen in ages.
Yeah.
And you got to love all the anime in it.
Yeah.
He's so anime, and I love it.
Yeah, I just love how it moves very fluently, you know. I love the character designs in particular, obviously, again, very anime-based.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, talking about Superman. The thing about Superman as a character that's very hard in the comics is, how do you write this godlike character who has basically next to no weaknesses? But, like, the way the story works is that, you know, first of all, this is a brand new Superman figuring everything out. So he's like, okay, I got to figure out how my powers work. I got to figure out everything. He has a learning curve. But it's also like the thing about Superman, people say this all the time, Superman's not about the powers, it's about the person.
Yeah.
And this definitely feels like the most optimistic Clark Kent I've seen in a very long time.
I agree, you know, because he's seeing the world, you know, in a positive way. He's seeing everything in a very different light than typical people would, which is, again, like you said, very refreshing. But when he sees the struggles of being Superman, you know, you can really see the weight on him.
Yeah. I also love, like, when he figure out his superhero, super hearing, he's like, Jimmy, people have problems. People have a lot of problems. But I also love the fact that Jimmy knew the whole time he was Superman. It's like, dude, we've been roommates for years. Like, I put two and two together.
Yeah, they didn't shy away from that, which I actually liked. I was like, okay, so now we have a very close unit here that knows that Clark is Superman. Aside from, obviously, Jonathan and Martha.
For sure, and I like the fact that how they're using Lois and Jimmy, like, it feels like an actual core group, like, everyone's participating and they're all making each other better.
Yeah.
Like, man, I've told you before, I kind of don't like all these fandom menace people. And just like all the videos that were coming out about, like, oh, look at Invincible's girlfriend. She's so insufferable. She's so this, she's so that. And like, Jesus Christ, can we just have a girl in a show without having people like overanalyze the character? But like, I just found like Lois to be a very refreshing character. It's like, okay, she's written like a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, she has her flaws, she has her positives, and that's very refreshing.
Yeah, and what's interesting with her relationship with Clark and Jimmy is she's looking at the flaws in herself and saying, okay, I could do better here.
Yeah, considering like, oh, you know, compared to all the other Loises in the multiverse, I'm so far behind. I'm like, do we need that? Although I gotta say, I kind of love what they did with Mixie Spitalik.
Yeah.
They turn him into a little chaos gremlin, and I love it.
Yeah. What was also interesting was the kryptonite element, you know, because that way it dramatically changed, because they treated like, you know, it was, you know, when he's infected, it affects his whole body like this.
Oh, wow. I really like that. But also another thing I really liked, Jor-El doesn't speak English.
It's all Kryptonian.
Which makes sense. You know, it's like, hey, I'm sending you to this planet. We know that they look like us. Unfortunately, I kind of don't speak the language, so shit. and it becomes this thing. It's like Clark thinks his people are invaders, but his father's trying to tell him that's not the case, but they have a communication barrier, which I really hope we get to expand on the next season. Honestly, man, that was some of the most fun animation and show that I've seen in quite a while. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely looking forward to season two.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just the designs, you know, of the Metropolis, you know, it's like a cross between Superman, the animated series, and, you know, the Superman Last Son design.
Mm.
Specifically, you know, how the architecture of Metropolis just looks, has that classic you know, city look to it, but also is very, you know, advanced.
For sure. I also kind of like what they did with Parasite.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, no, they basically turned Parasite into a mech suit, which is very interesting. But also like, oh, this is the downsides of using it. It was, and how they're like doing the villains. And the thing I like about the villains is they're all basically extensions of Kryptonian tech.
Yeah.
So they're all reverse engineered Kryptonian tech. You have the Suicide Squad, which is being built up, and Amanda Waller basically doing her Amanda Wallering. Yeah. You know, basically coming off the screen and saying it's Waller time. But, and like how they're tying in like Lois's dad and like their thing, it's very interesting. Like they built a very interesting world in Mythos, and I'm really looking forward to it. Like I'm really loving the redesigns. I'm loving the characters. The power sets are interesting. And like I said, how it ties all back to Kryptonian stuff just makes so much sense in the world of like Superman. Cause like, you remember Smallville?
Yeah.
Almost everything in that show is tied back to Kryptonite, in that all these people who are getting powers are getting it because of this initial event. So you have something that always ties back to the hero of the story. It's like, all this stuff came from where I came from. I'm responsible for this, and I have a sense of responsibility here.
Yeah, then, I agree.
Yeah, and they're doing something very similar this time around with Superman in this show. It's like all this stuff that's happening, it's all because my people invaded, and this is their leftover tech that's been repurposed. People are getting their hands on it, and we still even haven't gotten Lex Luthor.
No, but I keep feeling there were hints of him during the series. Like maybe he was the assistant for Parasite, you know, when he was still a human. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, he's got a Luther vibe, but I'm actually glad they did introduce Luther in the first season.
Yeah, no, Luther's such a big known threat. You can take your time with him.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like that little bitch boy, I remember, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was definitely some good TV for this year. I'm trying to remember what else came out in the last few months.
Let's see. Yeah, aside from that, not too much because we've got some stuff coming up, obviously. But video game wise, we've just had Marvel's Spider-Man 2 been released, and that's getting rave reviews.
Oh, yeah. No, I would definitely love to play that. I just don't have a PS5.
Neither do I, but I've heard good things, and I'm very tempted to get a PS5 at this point just to play the game.
I'm actually probably going to wait for the PC port because I got a new PC to play Baldur's Gate 3. So I've actually been waiting for like even the last Spider-Man game to go on a decent, low enough price to pick it up because I heard really good things about it.
Oh, I played it. It's addictive, and it makes sense, this version of Peter Parker. It makes sense.
Nice. So I'm definitely going to pick that up at some point. And like, considering the first one is on PC, I'm pretty sure this one as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see here. What else? Oh, we have Rick and Morty came back. I don't know if you watch that.
Oh, I watch it. I watch it. I'm a fan of that show.
Yeah. So what do you think of the new voice actors for Rick and Morty, for starters? Because I know like they had to replace the actor for reasons.
Yeah. I have to say, he does a pretty good job, you know? You might hear slight differences, but still, even to the casual viewer, you can't tell.
Oh, no, definitely. But it's not just that. It's also, yeah, exactly. For me, I couldn't tell. Like, unless you pointed it out or, like, I was doing the side by side, I straight up could not tell.
Yeah. So that's just good acting.
Yeah. Oh, so far this season, I'm enjoying it. The episodes are pretty cool so far. Got nothing bad to say. So let's see where it goes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should also bring up, Archer had just ended, I think a couple of weeks ago.
It ended not fully yet.
But it has 3 episodes coming up in December.
Which is a movie.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it because I felt that the finale wasn't really finale-esque. It didn't really give me a lot of closure, but it did, you know, it gives you ideas of what's to come in the 3-part episode or movie, as we called it. Our Our beta spies are out of a job. Again.
Yeah. So we'll see what they do to finish off the series, but I am glad. Like, Archer had such a good run. What was it? Like, this is season 9, isn't it?
No, this is season 14.
Jesus Christ.
I know, I know. It was that I forgot myself it was that long. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was 14 seasons. I was like, wow.
Jesus Christ, I was in my early 20s when this came out. Did you ever see, I don't know if you ever saw it, but you can find it online, the original pilot episode of Archer?
Yes.
There's a version of it where they replace Archer with a Velociraptor.
It's hilarious.
And it's just like, he's not even talking. He's just like, ah, ah. It's so good. Like, I really hope, as a joke, they redo the last episode, but with Velociraptor Archer.
Or Velociraptor Archer wakes up and it's all a dream.
That'd be good, too.
Yeah.
No, but that's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, no, it's good to see it. It's going to end on a high note. 14 seasons in a movie. It's pretty good. Pretty good way to go out.
Absolutely.
Oh,
it'll be sad to go, but it's time.
Yeah, yeah. I think like Archer's overstayed its welcome a little bit. Like the last few seasons have been very samey.
Yeah, and this season that they've really brought up Archer's age a lot. I'm like, even though he is, you know, he gotten older, he's still pretty badass when he's not completely drunk.
Yeah. I just love this one person's like, yeah, no, dude, like one bad hit and you're dead. Like, I don't know how. Although I got it now that I'm thinking about that episode, like the plastic surgeon and like fucking, oh God, when he convinces the girl to go full fucking The Thing.
Yeah.
That was like, oh, fucking Krieger. Of course you would.
It's classic Krieger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and there's one more show we got to talk about before we get to the main topic. It was a big one. It's a really big one. Ahsoka.
Oh, yes.
The long-awaited fifth season of Star Trek, Star Wars Rebels.
I had to tell you, what a season.
Mm-hmm. Although I will say that it does feel like, wait, did we just finish this season by switching out Thrawn and Ezra for Sabine and Ahsoka and like the fallen Jedis? They just literally like, okay, trading spaces. I liked the show, but it felt like it was all set up, no payoff.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, like the whole thing was built up. Oh my God, Thrawn. Okay, cool. Thrawn, his intro was great. His look is great. Didn't do much.
Yeah, I have a feeling if there is going to be a second season, they're going to really do a Thrawn, you know, story.
100%, but I feel like they... From what I'm getting the feeling of, they don't want to do another season. They want to continue it in the movie. Because apparently they're making a movie to tie up all the Mandoverse stuff.
Okay.
But that's supposed to come out like in 2025 or something. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we're going to get another season of Ahsoka. And then there's all that stuff going on in that galaxy. Like, oh my God, are we getting the Aboleth? Are we getting this? Are we getting that? Or is that what it was called? The Aboleth?
Yeah.
Because it's also a monster in D&D, so I got mixed up. Essentially, it's the mother, you know, from the Mortis gods.
Yeah.
Because like, it feels like they're hinting towards the Mortis gods. It feels like they're hinting towards this. And it is Dave Filoni, so I could believe that he would want to bring that stuff into the main canon. But it's like, cool, we did all this buildup. We brought in all these characters. Sabine's now Force-sensitive. So now what?
Yeah. What was interesting was this. You know, I always thought they should do the Thrawn trilogy, you know, as a movie, but it involves obviously the original characters. But if they couldn't do that, maybe a video game series.
You know, I'm also in the mindset of, it's been going around more and more, people have been saying this, I think it's about time Disney recasts the original cast.
Yeah, I think it's time, because, you know, that way you could tell more stories.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong. Like, look, they brought in Luke, but they obviously deepfaked him, you know, because, like, he didn't have too many scenes. But, like, I feel like if they're going to continue to move forward with, like, bringing in that character, bringing in other characters, building the universe, it's okay to recast these people. I don't think anyone, it's, look, it's like, if they had made that episode with Luke, instead of using it, if it was a one-time deep fake, that's fine. But if they want to keep using them, I honestly feel even the fan base themselves, like, oh, you brought in a new actor to play him? Yeah, he does a good job. Cool. Let's do this. Let's fucking do this.
Yeah, they do what they did in Star Trek: Strange New Worlds with James T. Kirk. And he does a pretty good job.
Yeah, exactly. And like, no one's like going to fucking starting a revolution over that. It reminds me of what was it there? But I can understand why Disney would hesitate, because like, the Star Wars fan base is so weird about this stuff. Like, you remember like Mando, where Jack Black cameoed?
Yeah, and there was such an uproar about that. I was like, okay, come on, guys. Seriously?
It's not like they brought in Jack Black to play Han Solo or some shit, you know? Which 100%, let's be honest, I can totally see Jack Black doing some dumb shit like that. Like, he would do it in a parody video. It's like, yeah, I totally shot first. And then you have like the other guy from Tenacious D playing a Chewbacca.
Oh, God.
Come on, tell me you can't see that being a good parody.
I can visualize it. I can draw it right now. It would be funny. But yeah, some fan bases are very, you know, strict like that. So I'm like, okay, guys, just ease up a bit, because I think there will be potential for them to, you know, move forward. And if they are going to use these characters, yeah, I would say recast them, but choose actors that they actually somewhat resemble. But even if you don't resemble them, just good actors.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, these characters have aged.
Yeah.
Like, in continuity, they've aged, so it's fine to recast them.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to get, like, a one-to-one Luke, Leia, Han, and all the,
exactly,
the
big boys.
Yeah. Just, and I think even that girl there, what was her name? Like, she was in the council on Ahsoka. She was like, Mothma?
I think so.
There's no way that's the original actress.
No. No, it's not.
Yeah, like, they've recast her. No one gives a shit.
Yeah, she was actually from, obviously, Revenge of the Sith. That's how she started, you know. And, like, obviously, they brought in for Rogue One, you know, and so, but yeah, but that's not the original actors for Return of the Jedi, so, yeah.
Yeah, no. Oh, and we also got to talk about the Anakin episode.
Oh, yeah, the centered Anakin, yeah. That was interesting, you know, just dealing with that, because, again, she knew what he became.
It's also fascinating to see, like, what Force ghosts can do. Like, Ahsoka was literally in between life and death, and like, yeah, no, I'm going to intervene and like give you the will to live.
Yeah.
And just literally seeing like he's at this perfect balance now in his death, and that he's between, he can call on Anakin, he can call on Vader, he can be whatever he needs to be.
Yeah.
Which one of the theories is that he's now replaced the father. Because the father was always the one in the balance and the one in the middle between the light and the dark.
Yeah, exactly.
And Anakin's done the whole shebang. You know, he's done the light, he's done the dark. So he is what he needs to be. Which is, like, one of the theories I heard, which I kind of love. Like, oh, yeah, he's replaced the role of the father now.
Yeah, it's interesting how these theories are coming out, you know, especially from the fans, because they really do analyze these things.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think, analyze what's canon, what's not canon.
Yeah. I think the most reach of a theory I heard was that Yeah, Ezra's not Ezra. He's a force projection made by the sisters. Oh, I'm like, God. I was like watching that video and I'm like, dude, you're just really stretching for content right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, come on, man. A lot of these Star Wars guys, like, they need it. They need the weekly stuff. They need, like, oh, I need to put out a theory that'll make people like, what?
You're right.
Yeah. But overall, like, I gotta admit, Ahsoka Tano, like, I think the character can use a little bit more personality. I find, like, the way they've made her, she's kind of, like, lost a lot of her charm. Like, she's too serious. And, like, I think maybe towards the end she was, like, livening up a little bit. But that also is, like, maybe just the character maturing and aging. Yeah. What did you think about Sabine now being able to use the Force?
About time. I think it's the appropriate term I could say. About time.
I think it's we have to establish the proper rules of the Force in that... Do you have to be force sensitive to be able to use it? Like, do you have to be born with the ability to use it, or can literally, with the right kind of training, anyone can achieve it?
Yeah, that part was not clear to me at the time. You know, I was like, well, this is kind of like borderline, you know, sensitive subject matter. But at some point, I think somebody's going to, you know, come up with a detailed explanation for it, saying, okay, maybe force sensitive, but... maybe anyone could be a Jedi. I'm like, no, you need to clear that up. Yeah, because this is just off.
Yeah. I think like somebody made a reference to like a line from the original movie. It's like, with the right amount of training, anyone can become a Jedi.
Again, that's a very loose definition there. You need to be more, you know.
Yeah. 100%. But if somebody comes out and says like, yeah, if you have the right kind of training and you learn how to use these types of weapons, and you have prolonged exposure, you can use the Force, but there are always going to be those who are more inclined, who learn it easier, or who are going to be stronger with it in, like, the long term. It's like,
yeah.
How do I put this? It's like, okay, this is going to be a really weird video gaming example, but it's like classes. So it's okay. Like, you have a wizard. The wizard's really good at casting spells. But even the fighter can learn how to use magic. It's just his threshold for magic is never going to be that high compared to the wizard.
Okay, now I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So it's like, cool, I can learn a spell or two, but, you know, this isn't my main class. This is not what I specialize in. But compared to, like, hey, I have a natural talent for magic. I have a natural talent for wizardry. I can do the high-level shit. But it's like, yo, dude, you've been like beating swords your whole life. But if we take a lot of time and a lot of practice, I can teach you the basics.
Yeah.
I think like what Star Wars needs to do is like we just need to like establish it. Like, what are the rules with the Force? It's like, is this something? Because they said everyone is connected to the Force, every living thing. But the ability to use the Force, like, then the new movies came out, like, yes, only people with high counts of midichlorians or high connections to the Force can use it. Or is it like, yeah, the reason why the Jedi took those kids is because they learned the Force easiest. But theoretically, with the right exposure and the right time and training, anyone can use basic Force techniques.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. It's just that I think, like, especially the prequel trilogy, like, hammered it in our heads so hard that you have to have high midichlorians to use the Force. So even if there was a way to train somebody who wasn't Force sensitive to become Force sensitive, I think it's just kind of been lost in the lore.
Yeah, there have been so many, you know, things that have changed over the years, you know. And of course, everyone's like, what's canon, what's not canon, and yeah, the lore has been lost or be rewritten, I think, to whoever feels, okay, this is canon.
Mm-hmm. Because it's fairly clear that Sabine was not Force-sensitive in the same way as characters like Ezra or characters like Luke were.
Yeah.
Like, Ezra's pretty force sensitive. He's especially very strong with communicating with animals and other life forms. But Sabine was a Mandalorian. And there's only been one force sensitive Mandalorian that we know of. But Mandalorians have learned how to fight with lightsabers.
Yeah.
But once again, doesn't mean they're force sensitive. So it's a question of like, okay, what's, you know, it's all we just need is like a line somewhere. Somebody explaining, it's like, yeah, she wasn't force sensitive, but she spent so much time training with a lightsaber. She spent time training with Ahsoka. She learned the basics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But we'll see what they do with it. That's all I'm
saying. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully.
So one more thing to talk about, and then like we can move on to our other Star Wars, our other Star topic. But I don't know if you know this, but yesterday came out the Five Nights at Freddy's movie.
Yes, I do know about that.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but me and my buddy are probably going to get together on Halloween to watch it.
Good time to watch it. I haven't seen it yet, but I've been hearing mixed reviews about it.
I've been hearing mostly good stuff, so I'm actually very curious to see where that goes.
Yeah. What's interesting is, you know, I'm always hesitant when they, you know, doing adaptations of popular video game franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, let's face it, the first few ones were kind of duds.
Yeah, a lot of them still are.
Well, Sonic the Hedgehog is actually probably one of the most easily popular ones.
Mario was pretty good, too.
Yeah. Well, the animated Mario, not the live action.
Hey, I'm going to die on that hill. I fucking love the live action Mario movie.
You know how many times Bob Hoskins almost died on that set during the making of that movie?
Which makes the end product even better. No, but honestly, like, I'm going to tell you this, and I've had this conversation with other people. If you rename the movie something like Dinosaurs in Manhattan, and just pretend you don't know what Super Mario Brothers is, the movie in of itself is a fun sci-fi movie.
Okay.
It's not a good Mario Brothers movie, but it's a fun 90s sci-fi movie.
All right, if we're looking from that point of view, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Like, obviously, like, it feels like they had a script for a completely different movie, and then they just slapped the Mario label on it, which I would 100% believe for back in the day. You know, it's like, well, we don't know how to fucking do a Mario movie.
Yeah.
What are we supposed to do?
It's like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's like, I don't know, fucking take Mad Max, Blade Runner, and just slap it together and see what happens.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, what was interesting was the directors at the time, you know, I think it was a married couple. They had done a few movies, you know, they were obviously from the, very popular from a television series called Max, damn it, I just forgot the name.
It'll come.
Anyway, during the making of the movie, they were let go and the DP actually took over directing. That's how chaotic the behind the scenes of making of Super Mario Bros. The movie was like back in 1993.
No, it was very chaotic. But again, like, if you take out the Mario elements from it, or just look at the Mario elements as more the Easter eggs, it's a fun 90s sci-fi movie. And it's, the production value is very good. The effects are really good. The set designs are really good. Like,
yeah,
the only thing that actually holds the movie back is the Mario brand.
Yeah, I like the musical score though. I thought the score was nice.
Oh yeah, no, it's really fun, and like, the characters are good. They're fun. They're relatable. It's like, let's be honest. Like, how many movies, like especially now or ever, do you have like a main character like Bob Hoskins be like the lead and be like the superhero? Like, he's like this tiny Italian guy who's like going to, it's like he's saving his girlfriend and his brother's also saving a princess. I'm like, you know, I just like it. It's fun.
Yeah. If you think about it from that point of view and not remember what the subject matter is. But yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah. So 100%, like, it's a good movie. It's not a good Mario movie, but it's a good sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
But yeah. Now, so back on Freddy, I am curious to see it, like, the evolution of that entire franchise on the internet has been a fascinating project.
Yeah, I would say so. Just from the first game and then what it became, you know, as it went on, I was like, yeah, they changed things up a bit.
It created an entire genre of storytelling of hidden details or codes or Easter eggs, and a lot of games adapted that in the indie space, especially.
Yeah.
Like, you had stuff like come out afterwards, like Hello Neighbor or Bendy and the Ink Machine, and you can see some inspiration from Five Nights at Freddy's as an indie horror game, how it affected certain other projects. So it is curious to see how they did the movie, because I remember hearing that apparently Scott Cawthon, the creator of the franchise, was like, yeah, he read like 500 scripts that were proposed to him for this movie before he picked one.
Well, he definitely wants to make sure that his baby, as it were, you know, is told right and told very well. Mm-hmm. And also is a new and unique experience for the audience and maybe who hadn't played the video games. And maybe, you know, because of the movie, they could go and experience the video games.
100%. But also, you know, it's funny, some of the not accepted scripts for the Five Nights at Freddy's movies were adapted into other movies.
Now, that's something that has been done before.
Yeah. Like, what was that movie? It was with Nicolas Cage. It was a few years back where he's playing a security guard. He doesn't say a fucking word. And he spends the entire movie killing animatronics.
You know what? I have to look it up. I have to look this up now. So it's just to see what this is.
Yeah, right. Nicolas Cage animatronics. You'll find it.
Yeah, because that's definitely Five Nights at Freddy right there. So just give me 1 second, folks. Yeah. Animatronics movie. Okay, hold on. Willy's Wonderland.
Yeah, that was it. It's kind of fucking hilarious because he's like, he doesn't say a fucking word and he's working at a place for the night. And then, like, he just, like, randomly beats the shit out of every one of these animatronics.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the poster of it. They have a similar design of some of the animatronics from Freddy's.
Yeah. No, 100%. I don't know if it's true. It's my, like, theory. But, like, that movie is just clearly like, okay, this was a script written for Five Nights at Freddy's. It was not taken. They shopped it around. They turned it into another movie.
Yeah, but yeah, stuff like that happens at Hollywood all the time.
Mm-hmm. And it's very clear to see. And it's kind of funny because, like, you know, this franchise spawned so many copycats or inspired so many people. So it is very curious to see. I'm looking forward to seeing the movie and what it's going to be like, if it's going to be interesting, if it's going to be how close it is to the lore of the games, because it's supposed to be its own thing from what I understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think that's our good wrap-up of, like, everything that's been going on geek-wise. Mm-hmm. So why don't we talk about the main topic and go into some Trekking conversation.
Yes.
All right, so, you know what? You convinced me. I checked out Strange New Worlds, and I gotta say, I really enjoyed it.
Told you.
Yeah. So why don't you, like, break down, like, what you enjoy about Strange New Worlds?
I like the fact that it's, you know, it's a new story every week, you know, harking back to the original series, The Next Generation. It's not one continuous storyline like some of these other Star Trek series have been.
Like Discovery and all that.
Yeah, so it's a new episode, you know, every week. I like the cast. I like how they're... You know, they're taking some of the characters, especially Pike. He's fantastic. You know, especially with knowing what's going to happen to him in the future. He's not going to let that hold him back.
Yeah. I really got to admit, that's a very interesting plot device with him. It's like he knows his fate. But then again, we also know his ultimate fate, so it's a bit of a mix.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, the character Spock in this version is quite interesting, especially the fact in one episode he experienced being a human. Holy, I'm like, okay, this is a take we didn't even consider before, but this is fresh. This is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I like it goes back to an episodic form, like you said. And you have, like, some classic Style Trek episodes. You have some new Style Trek episodes. Two of the episodes that really, really stick in my mind.
Ah, yes. I think I know what you're talking about.
The first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really love that as an introduction. It's like, oh, wow, okay. Well, we better explain everything and, like, where this world is going. It's like, okay, this is a very optimistic way to do it. It's like, yeah, you guys are on the brink of, like, literally destroying your fucking planet. You've been in it. You've been exposed to us, so now you're kind of our responsibility. So here's our history. Here's how things fucked up. Here's what happened. You have a chance now to prevent that from happening. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm good with this. I like this episode. The other episode that really, really, really stuck with me, and it's basically like a submarine episode, but their first encounter with the Gorn.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah, where they're hiding from the Gorn in some kind of like nebula. That was like, okay, this is fascinating. So let's talk about that first before we continue anything else. What they've done with the Gorn?
You know, they're a bit more vicious than what we've seen them in the past. I like where they're going with it, you know?
I'm honestly under the assumption this is not the same Gorn, because they've changed them heavily compared to the original canon.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Or, you know, some people are like, well, maybe it's a different fraction of the Gorn. I was like, no. I think they just did. They wanted to make sure they were more aggressive. And that's fine.
Yeah. But it could also be like, it's the Gorn hegemony.
Yeah.
So there could be like multiple sub-races of Gorn.
Yeah.
Because we've never heard of like the Gorn, like, what was it there? And I really loved the last episode because we got to see a young Scotty.
Yes, that was cool.
Yeah, and apparently there's something to do with like Gorn and exposure to light and how it really like umps up their reproduction or their need to feed. So it makes me think like, okay, this is different from the Gorn we've seen before, because the Gorn we've seen before, yeah, they only had like, I think, what, two in-universe canon appearances?
Yeah.
Original series and Enterprise.
Exactly.
But this is something like very alien from the Gorn that we've seen, and like the fact that they're this dangerous and they don't become a threat in later series, there has to be a reason they're not as big of a problem, because they're like insanely vicious.
Yeah. Which I think should be explored in future seasons, obviously.
Yeah. And the fact is they feel less like a sentient humanoid reptilian race and more like xenomorphs.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they definitely took influence, obviously, from, you know, aliens and whatnot, you know, from different franchises and say, okay, let's just really redesign the Gorn and just really up, you know, the aggressiveness, mm-hmm. just how fearsome looking they should look, you know, but let's not stray too far away from where it came from originally.
There's also the fact that Gorn do appear in Lower Decks.
Yes.
Like, they're in the background, but you see Gorn in those shows, and they have a very particular design. So they're different from the Gorns we're seeing in Enterprise.
Yeah.
It's all from in Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking to myself, okay, did the Gorn evolve over time? Did something happen to their that changed their biology? Or is this a subset of Gorn?
You know, it could be a mixture of both if you think about it, because it was the same thing with the Klingons. You know, they've drastically changed, you know, from the television series to the movies. And yeah, even when Strange New Worlds, you're starting to see some of the your typical Klingons, as opposed to where Discovery had started, where they had drastically changed the appearance.
Oh, yeah. Thank God they went back to the traditional Klingon stuff, because what the fuck?
Yeah, I think it was an experiment, and they just made out, it's like, okay, they evolved.
I think it's a mix.
Yeah.
Because we know from Archer that there was a virus that was put in place that got rid of their head ridges, and they had a more human-like appearance. But over time, that went away through generations and through, like, getting it out of their system.
Exactly.
But I think somebody else said, like, it's also a possibility that the Klingons we saw in that show were either like recovering Klingons who weren't affected or were affected differently from that virus.
Yeah.
Because we know the Klingons really messed up with their genetics, and like it took a while. So it could be we're now in an era where the Klingons are like returning to their original appearances, or we're starting to interact with Klingons who have not yet been affected, or it's a mix. You know, I would love to see in Strange New Worlds some human-looking Klingons show up too, because, like, yeah, at this time, a lot of them had human appearances.
Yeah. So maybe that'll happen down the line. I wouldn't rule it out.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very curious to see what they're going to do. But, oh, and another thing about the Gorn that they kind of remind me of. Did you ever watch that show Andromeda?
No, I didn't see that.
Okay. There was this alien species, and they were, like, really, like, creepy monsters. And what they would do is they would lay their eggs in people, and, like, you would have, like, batches of 9 pop out of you. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, we're doing – that's another thing where the Gorn probably got inspired from.
Well, what you're describing, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah. And aside from that, like, I'm enjoying the cast. I'm enjoying Una. I'm enjoying basically everybody.
Yeah.
I think there was only one episode I did not like.
What's that?
The one with Dr. Omega's daughter and the Grand Illusion.
Okay. I can understand that. That one I also felt was a bit weak.
It's not that it was weak, but going into it and I'm like, oh, this is clearly a dream sequence, or like something's going on, and I'm like, none of this fucking matters, so I'm just going to skip to the end.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference when it's like a holodeck episode and you know what's going on, and then there's the drama of like getting the people out, and you have the people in, you have the people outside, but I don't know, something in the way that episode was written just didn't sit well with me.
Eh. I'm sure somebody liked it.
What about you? What were some of your favorite episodes?
Well, like you said, the pilot, that was one of my favorite episodes from season one. The season one finale, I also liked the fact that a different Pike, you know, shows our Pike a different, you know, future if he hadn't made his sacrifice.
If I remember correctly, that's basically redoing an episode of the OG Star Trek.
Oh yeah.
But basically having Captain Pike as the captain instead of Kirk, and how things would have changed.
Yeah. And not for the better.
That was a fascinating episode experiment.
Yeah, like, I think it worked. It worked because it does show, you know, there are some hard decisions that you have to make when you're in, you know, command of a starship.
Yeah, and it also shows the differences in the right man at the right place. Like, Pike is a great captain. He's a great diplomat. But you didn't need a diplomat to deal with the Romulans in that situation, because that's not what they would respect. They would respect more somebody like Kirk's approach.
Yeah.
So, like, by having Kirk be the captain at that time, it basically prevents a war.
Yeah.
But Pike... there's no one saying he's a bad captain. It's just that he was not the right man for that situation.
Yeah. you understand why he was trying to do end things diplomatically, you know, as he would, as anyone would, if everybody else, but the Robins would not have respected that at all, and they clearly didn't.
Yeah, the Romulans are a weird fucking bunch, let's be honest.
Yeah. So there was that episode. There's also in season two, the Lower Decks crossover.
I love that episode. That was so good.
Yeah, that's one of my personal favorites, especially, you know, seeing both crews interacting with each other. The Cerritos crew members, you know, see the Enterprise crew members. You know, they all felt, especially the Boiler, felt kind of let down that he met essentially his heroes, and they were kind of, you know, not up to par.
More like they were regular people.
Yeah. But that's just, he's just looking at, you know, from outsider's point of view. He's not really, you know, part of that crew and what they do every day. So, again,
it's a whole hero worship thing, you know? It's like, it's why they say you should never meet your heroes.
Yeah. But they were, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That you build up an idea of them in your head, but they can never live up to that.
Yeah.
But overall, I fucking love that episode. That was a lot of fun. The thing with the Orions at the end, like, really, like, was very, like, wholesome, you know?
Exactly.
It's like, oh, an Orion sign, that's all I've ever wanted. The musical episode was really freaking good, too.
Yeah, it was.
I gotta say, in regards to how you, in regards to explaining a musical episode within a serious show like Star Trek, that was such a fascinating way to do it.
It certainly was, and it made sense.
It made sense why everything turned into a musical, and I loved it. But it also brought up the dangers of life becoming a musical, because then people start singing their feelings.
Oh, yes.
And of course, the carrot on top was the boy band Klingons. And the fact that it's not the singing that's a dishonor to them. It's the fact that they you'd think Klingons would be like metal or rock, but no. The Klingons are singing like fucking boy bands, and that's what's dishonorable.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I've watched that scene so many times. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That, I'm loving it. It's a lot of fun. But, oh, it's a shame between the writers and the actor strike. It's going to be a while before we get the next season.
I know.
And like, oh, what a cliffhanger to leave on, eh?
I know. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it looks like the Gorn kidnapped everybody.
Oh, and then Pike is left with a horrible decision. Does he follow his orders or try to rescue his crew?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is where being a captain is the worst possible job that you could ever have.
Yeah. You know, it's also the very, how do I put this? Going into Lower Decks. There's this weird reality of what Starfleet is and what it wants to be.
Yeah.
Starfleet wants to be explorers. They want to be researchers. They want to be scientists. But in reality, they become soldiers. They become the military of the Federation.
Yeah, well, it comes back to what I was talking to you about the other day when we were discussing this episode that we're going to talk about in a second, where I was mentioning Scotty from the film Star Trek Into Darkness, where he's like, we're explorers, not soldiers. I'm like, yeah, but you eventually become soldiers. Mm-hmm. You become militarized because, unfortunately, you sort of involve themselves in situations that seem hopeless, and they have to act. Otherwise, it threatens everybody.
Yeah. And I remember way back in Next Generation, it's like where they were doing like a ship test or like battle drills. It's like, and Riker says like, oh, combat is such a small part of a Starfleet captain's repartee. And I'm like, the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
So we know why you weren't part of the Dominion War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which brings us to our episode.
Yes. So before we get to that episode, let's do a deep dive into like the new season of Lower Decks. I gotta admit, it's a really good season. Like there hasn't really been a bad episode.
No, and we found out some very interesting things. We saw a couple of nice things. We saw Voyager for the first time in so many years.
The Voyager Museum.
Yeah. But that also is a callback to Picard, where, you know, eventually goes off to the Starfleet Ship Museum.
Yeah. It's like, okay, cool, I get it. The when the exhibit first comes out, they put it on Earth. It does the thing on Earth and eventually gets put into orbit at the Fleet Museum, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But the first episode, like, all the Voyager deep cuts were so goddamn good.
I know.
Like, Voyager was my first Star Trek show. I don't know if I told you that.
No, you actually didn't tell me that, but it's a good place to start.
Yeah. So it was really weird. Back when I was a teenager, here in Montreal, we have a TV show, a TV channel called Space. Yeah. So Space would, in syndication, play all these old sci-fi shows. So Star Trek, Stargate, Farscape, they would play all of them.
Yeah.
So what would happen is I would get home and I'd watch an episode of Star Trek Voyager. But also around 11 o'clock on Fox, Star Trek was also in syndication.
Ah.
So they were playing Voyager. So what I was doing is I was watching an episode on Space and then recording my VCR, because, you know, VCRs back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
To tape the episode of Voyager that was playing on Fox. But they were at two different points in the series.
Oh, boy.
So I'm watching episodes from seasons 2 and 3 on Space, and then episodes from 5 and 6 on Fox. So I'm like, so I'm watching episodes with Kes, then I'm watching episodes of 7 of 9, and they're both moving forward. I'm just like waiting for everything to lap. So I saw it in such a weird order. But you also got to remember, Star Trek is one of those shows that, because it's episodic, you don't miss much.
Exactly.
So it's like, okay, cool. B'Elanna and Paris got together, or Kes has been swapped out with 7 of 9. Okay, the Doctor's personality has changed a little bit. They use Neelix less. You know, funny enough, speaking of Star Trek Voyager, just a quick little point. I was talking with a friend of mine this weekend, well, a few weeks ago, about Star Trek. And I was like, you know, Neelix was a fun character, but his relationship with Kes was always kind of creepy.
Yeah, you could ever feel that.
Yeah. And I said, I just blur it out. You know what would completely fix their relationship? If instead of being in a relationship, Kes was more Neelix's adoptive daughter.
That's an interesting take.
Think about it, because he's very overprotective of her.
Yeah.
But what if you replace it from being a jealousy thing compared to being a parental love kind of thing? So then they're still very close. They're very close because you can say something like, yeah, he found her at a very young age, and she, like, blossomed really fast.
Yeah.
And then you still have all that parental love because, like, oh, he's known her since she was, like, a little child, and, like, he sees her as a daughter, and she sees him as a father. Like, the stories don't even change. It just, their relationship has a much more wholesome angle, and it also gives Neelix a better look. If you think about it, because he then takes on the whole like godfather role, taking care of kids and being more nurturing as a character. Yeah. So if you have that from the very beginning, it would like make his character far more appealing.
Oh, well.
Hindsight is 2020, right?
Exactly.
Anyway, so back to Lower Decks.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the Voyager episode was really good.
Yeah.
I love what they're doing with T'Lyn.
Yeah.
The Tuvix thing. I kind of love it. It's like when they're like one of the Lower Decks cast gets Tuvixed, and now Tuvixed is a verb. It's like, so how did Janeway handle it? She straight up murdered the guy. It's like, holy shit, Janeway didn't fuck around.
No.
And I just kind of love that. It's like you have Shanks, the security officer, this big tough Bajoran guy. It's like, holy fuck, Janeway didn't mess around.
Which I think was appropriate at the time.
Look, they were stranded in the Delta Quadrant. They had to do what they had to do.
Yeah.
Oh, no. But, like, Shanks' reaction to it, just, I fucking loved it. And then the Moopsie.
Yes. Oh, my God.
The fucking Moopsie.
I just remembering that, I was like, oh, my God.
I remember watching that, and I rewatched the episode, and I'm just like watching how it moves and flops around, and it's just like it flops around like this little, like tiny little cuddly little thing.
But no, no, it's dangerous.
My favorite, like I joked about this with a friend of mine, at the end of the episode when they catch the Moopsie, and then then the humans accidentally open the door again, and it starts moving towards the hatch. And you just see, it's like, oh boy, more murder! You just see, like, immediately going for the opening, and it just killed me. Oh, no.
Oh, man.
That episode was fucking solid. And then we start building on this whole thing with Mariner and her character arc for this season, which crescendos nicely, but let's build to that. Mm-hmm. I love, okay, be honest with me. We all thought this season was going to be versus AI.
Yes, we did.
Okay, like, oh man, they're setting this up. It's going to be this whole AI thing. It's going to be this whole AI war. And it's like, nope. Like, first you had the one episode with the AI planet, which was like, I fucking love Ransom's like a critique of art. It's like, no, these are the good ones. Like, really? That's good. Like, also Ransom, like, can we just give him props this season? Like, he's the way they've been writing him and how he's actually supporting Mariner and just having his character be like so supportive and positive. I'm really liking what they're doing with his character.
Yeah, it's a complete departure from the previous seasons where he didn't really care for her, but I think it's a point where he's like, okay, I have to give this person, you know, some guidance here because I could see they really need it.
Mm-hmm. It's also like, wow, you finally start seeing him act like a commander.
Yeah.
I feel like before, because it's lower deck, so we don't see the bridge crew as often, we never really got to see him do his thing.
Exactly.
But it's also nice to see him do his thing properly. And the other thing that I like about how they're doing him now is there's been this big trope with male characters in authority being very toxic.
Yeah.
Like everyone's like, oh, we got to bring these guys down. Like they're horrible. Like, no, we're not making him toxic. Yeah. He's a bit chauvinistic. He's a bit of a flirt, but you see why he has his job. You see that, look, when it matters, he's a good commander and he's looking to build the people under him, not build them down.
Exactly. And hopefully at some point he'll make a good captain someday.
Mm-hmm. And then you have like that one episode with the Ring World, I think it was, and like Boimler being like, no, no, I can do everything by myself.
Oh,
and
yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah.
What was it there? The Black Mountain and the Space Koala?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, hold on. Right now, I'm just going to pull up the episode list of Lower Decks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Please do that.
Yeah. All right, so let's hear. Then we got... Oh, this is true. Oh. Lower Decks is the first time we've ever been to the Orion homeworld.
That's right. They've always talked about it during various episodes throughout the whole, you know, arc of Star Trek, but never really went to the planet. So it was cool to actually see that this time and just see how vastly different it is, you know, as obviously other planets, but in such a way, though.
Mm-hmm. You know what it reminded me of as an episode? Do you remember in DS9,
mm-hmm.
when we went to Ezri's family's home on at the Trill homeworld.
Yeah, what season was that in, though?
Last season, because it was like with Ezri Dax.
Okay.
But you know the one I'm talking about, right?
I do.
Like, this episode gave me similar feelings to that.
Yeah, I could say that.
Yeah. And, like, that was a really good episode. Also, Talyn is such a good fit with the team.
Yeah.
And then you also had that subplot with, like, the Mark Twains.
Oh, yes.
That was such a dumb B-plot, but it was fun.
Anything they have to do with the holodeck, you know, as a subplot is always fun.
Yeah. And then the next episode, we had the triple Betazoids.
Yeah. Three times the trouble.
Mm-hmm. And also, we got the line coined of, I must be through transitive properties. I too am Vulcan as a motherfucker.
These one-liners they come up with is just, it works.
It works. It really works. Let's see here. Oh, then another really good episode. Going to the Ferengi homeworld post-Dominion War.
Yes.
And I kind of love what they're doing. It's like, you know, Rom's in charge. And Rom sees a whole different way of making money. It's like, look, hospitality and services is much better in the long term than weapon sales. And he actually, like, you know what? Shit's been going on with our ships. And we want to, like, possibly join the Federation. We've done a bunch of stuff that makes us more Federation worthy. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. Also, like, the whole how the captain dealt with Rom and his, like, negotiation tactics. I'm like, yo, Rom and what's her name? His wife. What was her name again?
Leeta.
Rom and Leeta have such a good 1-2 punch.
Yes.
Like, Rom pretends to be the idiot and, like, Leeta's like, yeah, just let him play around with numbers. It'll make him happy.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's such a good con tactic that, like, it's an actual con tactic. I'm like, you know what? Props. That was a good thing. And the whole, like, okay, cool. We'll give you all your demands. You just got to bring in one world into the Federation. You have any idea how easy that's going to be? Well, I didn't say which world.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then we had the whole subplot with Mariner as well. Like, that's really continuing to build up.
Yeah. Yeah, especially coming to this planet after the Dominion War, as we talked about, and just seeing how reckless she's getting, you know. And this happens, you know, periodically during the course of the season. She's getting more reckless and reckless until finally, boom, something happens.
Exactly. And because the thing is, like, somebody was saying, like, I saw it was it's a pretty good thing to say. It's like, you feel that in earlier episodes, this arc or this problem gets resolved, but it keeps coming back.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, these things don't go away right away. It's like, this is, and you find out later, this is like deep-seated trauma.
Yeah, then we're going to tell you why, how exactly. So, this past week's episode, The Inner Fight, which I think was a nice take on the Inner Light episode from Next Generation, just the title play. Yeah. We see, you know, the captain asking several officers of the lower deck, of course, our trio, you know, kind of convince them to take Mariner on a boring mission where they're looking for another officer, a former cadet, which
Nick Locarno, I believe.
Yes, for those of you who remember from First Duty Next Generation, where he was kicked out of the academy for being part of the, I think it was the Nova section.
Yeah. And funny enough, he was also played by the same actor who played Tom Paris.
Yes, exactly.
In fact, I believe the idea was that Tom Paris's character was supposed to be Nick Locarno, but because of licensing and royalties, they couldn't bring him back as that character. So they basically made a new character who was exactly the same thing.
Exactly.
So a lot of people are like, you know, let's be honest, Tom Paris is basically Nick Locarno. That's everyone's headcanon.
Yeah.
But now, not anymore.
Nope. Locarno is now currently as a pilot for hire. So while Freeman and the crew, the Cerritos, are going looking for him, our lower decks are on another mission. Supposed to be a safe repair job on Sherbal 5. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that.
It's okay. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. But while they're down there, they encounter several senior officers from various missing ships.
Yeah, because that's been a whole plot line throughout the season. This weird mystery ship with like a weird face has been like destroying a bunch of like random non-Federation ships. And I don't know if you, and I believe I mentioned this to you, but if you look at them closely, all the ships that we see are all like former Star Trek antagonist races.
Yeah, Romulans, Klingons.
Ferengi.
Ferengi.
Kardashians.
Now, that's a common, you know, thing, folks. Everyone confuses that name.
Cardassians, Bynar, funny enough.
Yeah.
And Orions. I don't know if the Bynar were ever a threat to species.
I don't think so. The only time I remember was them stealing the Enterprise to get, you know, back to their world. And they downloaded them, their consciousness of that planet into the Enterprise computer.
Oh, yeah, I remember they just didn't give a fuck about anyone around them.
Exactly. They just took the ship and just said, we're going to go to our world.
Yeah, that's annoying. Yeah. So, okay, we'll leave it as antagonistic. And it was very fascinating because we all thought the theme of this season was AI. So yeah. We thought this had to be some kind of AI. We thought it was linked to Badgy. But then we had the Badgy episode. And that went a completely different way. Yeah, Badgy became a god and he ascended. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go make a new universe or hang out with the Q Continuum. Later, bitches.
Yeah.
And even the other AIs like Peanut Hamper and the other one, I forget his name. The one who looks like HAL 9000.
I know you're talking about
Agamus.
Agamus.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, that was resolved in a very peaceful way, which is a very Star Trek thing to do. But considering like where Star Trek has been the last few years with all these like anti-AI stuff, like you can clearly tell the writers are being like, yeah, we don't like AI. AI would make a great villain. Let's make AI the villain for everything.
Yeah.
Let's turn Star Trek into Mass Effect. So yeah. We all thought that's where it was going, but the theme of this season has been the entire concept of the show, and they just kind of like slid it under the radar. It's all been about the lower decks.
Yeah.
Because every time we saw one of these ship attacks, they were all structured the same way. We were with the lower deckers of these various ships, and you can see at least one of them is very disillusioned. He's very like, fuck this, fuck the captain, fuck what we're doing. If I was in charge. And then the attack happens. And we all thought, oh, it must be some high technology just disabling them. You know, it's our first thought because we're looking at it from the outside. And I mentioned this to you earlier. It's that if you go back and rewatch all those clips, the lower deckers, or at least the one who's the most vocal, is not surprised.
Yeah.
Everyone else is panicking, but they're completely calm. And we got a hint of that with the Ferengi one, where it's like, oh, clearly he made a deal with whatever's going on. So he disabled the lower deckers would disable the ship. This other ship would come. And if you've noticed, the only people on the planet that we've seen have been the commanding officers.
Yeah. It would make total sense, and you have to wonder, you know, are they part of whatever is happening?
Like, we don't fully know what's going on, but we do know is, first of all, let's look at Nick Locarno. Yeah. Nick Locarno was in the Lower Decks episode. He was barred from the Academy. He has connections to people from the Lower Deck episode. Sorry about that. From the original TNG. And now we also know that Mariner also was friends with the most famous person from that episode, Sito.
Yeah.
Which also means, like, man, Mariner's, like, what, in her 40s?
Yeah. There's a clip that there's actually a quote that from YouTube, a comment that I mentioned to you. I'm going to read this out loud to the audience here. You know what's only tragic? Sito's death was in 2370. This episode, if each season is indeed a year on the Cerritos like the previous series are, is 2384. Mary's been holding on to the memory of Sito for 14 years. 14 years of self-destruction, 14 years of just pure self-sabotage, 14 years of just wanting to stay stagnant when everyone knows she's got greatness in her. That's depressing. That's a deep, deep, deep depression.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, but it also makes it makes me trying to want to figure out what Mariner's age is.
Yeah.
So let's say she was a little younger than Sito, like a few years. Because Sito apparently like moved up very quickly.
Yeah.
So that means, like, when people join Starfleet, they're usually in their 20s or in their teens?
I think it varies, if I'm being honest, because I think Crusher was, like, in his late teens, early 20s when he joined the Academy.
Yeah. So we can assume that Mariner was probably on DS9 during the Dominion War. She would have been a cadet or an ensign and probably in her 20s.
Yeah.
So on the Cerritos, she's definitely in her 30s compared to everybody. I think she has like maybe a decade on the rest of the group because she's been like around the block.
Exactly.
So she's probably in her 30s where everyone else is probably more in their 20s.
Yeah.
It's just it's an interesting thing to think about because like the way everyone's drawn, you can't tell the age difference. But when you stop and think about it with everything Mariner knows, her connections, it makes sense she's had like a whole decade of experience more than everybody else.
Yeah. What was interesting was, you know, there's a line in the episode where she's like, I just want to be an ensign. I don't want to, you know, tell, you know, or my friends for them to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sito had been. But what was interesting was in Lower Decks, that episode of Next Generation, that was pretty much a redemption because she was held back a year at the Academy. And then she was on the Enterprise by personal request from Picard because he believed that she deserved a second chance. And she chose this. And what's interesting is that a Klingon would bring this up to Mariner. Of all people, a Klingon saying she chose this. You dishonor her memory.
Hey, sometimes you got to take the brute force approach of the Klingons.
Yeah.
Like therapy. So everyone needs different kinds of therapy.
No, you get no BS from them. No BS from them.
I will say this, though. I love this Klingon.
Yeah.
Like, what's his name? Moss, I think? Or
Maha, I think it's how it's pronounced. I don't know.
He is a really interesting character because, like, he's the Klingon that mutinied and stopped the Klingons working with the Pakleds.
Yeah.
And he's also a lower decker who became a captain, and he seems to be a really honorable Klingon. Not like the fake honor, but like, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
He's legit honorable, and you also notice he was the only Klingon on that planet.
That is true.
And you also see, like, the Klingon who took over his ship was the lower decker. Yeah. Was the same one saying, like, oh, you know, he's not going to be in charge for long. And you could also see how shit of a captain he was.
Exactly.
So it was very interesting watching Mock interact with Mariner and bringing the whole lower deck stuff full circle. And the fact is, like, we also find out that the ship that's been attacking all these guys was built and being operated by Nick Locarno.
Yeah, who's kidnapped Mariner.
Mm-hmm. Because if Mariner knew Cito back at the Academy, there's a good chance she knew Nick. Because you actually see, like, Nick? Like, the way she addresses him, this is somebody she knew.
Yeah.
So it's very... We're basically... We all thought this was going to be an AI-driven plot line for this season. But this is much better. This is much more to the roots of what the show is. It's coming from the lower deck. It's like, we're seeing all the lower decks on all these different ships, all these mutinies, and now we're going back to the original lower deckers of Nick Locarno and Cito and how that ties into everything. So I'm very curious to see what the next episode will be.
Yeah, I have a theory that Nick is going to try and convince Mariner to mutiny against the Cerritos.
Very possible.
Yeah, considering what's happened in the last episode and considering the theory that we're talking about right now, it would make perfect sense.
Yeah, because he hasn't targeted a Starfleet ship yet.
No, but I think the Cerritos would probably be the obvious choice here.
Possibly, but the reason why I don't think a Starfleet ship has been targeted is because this wouldn't work on a Starfleet ship.
Probably not.
Because think about it. What's going on? The people at the bottom are mutinying and taking over the ship.
Exactly.
But cultures like the Orions, the Klingons, the Cardassians.
Romulans.
The Romulans. This kind of shit is par for the course in some regards.
Yeah, but not with Starfleet officers, no.
Yeah, Starfleet is far more... rigid in how their chain of commands work. Whereas I can possibly see the Romulans not taking kindly to this kind of bullshit because, like, oh, we can't have our officers just like killing each other back and forth, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. Klingons, like, you know, it's fucking Klingons, man. They just do what they do. Orions, I could see them pulling dumb shit like that. But yeah, this wouldn't work on a Starfleet military ship.
Unless he had an in with someone.
But even then, like, too much of the crew would not go along with it. That's the difference.
Exactly. He would have to kill everybody.
Mm-hmm. And even then, he's not killing anybody. He's just taking the commanding officers and putting them on that planet because probably the rest of the crew is, like, more or less the same. It's like, yeah, well, fuck them. Like, let's do shit our own way. Like, The Ferengi don't have a military. They have their trade vessels.
Yeah.
The Orions, same thing. Don't have an official military. They're more like independent groups. Klingons have a military, but they're more like pirates.
Yeah, they could kill the captain and just take command.
Yeah. Cardassians, funny enough, have a very strict military, but like who knows what the fuck has happened to them since the Dominion War.
A lot, probably.
You know, that's actually one thing I'm a little disappointed in. We didn't see the Cardassians being taken.
This is true.
Like, we saw all the other ones, including the fucking Bynar, but we didn't see the Cardassians. Like, they showed up out of nowhere.
Wonder why that is, but again, maybe there'll be an explanation in the finale.
Not very possible. But overall, I can't wait for next week's episode.
Yeah.
And I think season 4 has been very strong so far.
I agree.
So let's see them stick that landing, and I can't wait for season 5.
You know there's going to be a season 5. You know it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I was actually reading an interview with one of the main writers, and he wrote something like, they want me to write the end of every season like it could be a season finale. But no, I don't want to do that because I want people to feel like these characters are going to keep going.
Well, the fact they are dealing with animation, they could very well do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm very excited to see where this goes. I love the characters. I love, you know, this take on Star Trek. And yeah, I want to see more.
Yeah. Speaking of more. Did you hear? Apparently, it looks like Star Trek Prodigy Season 2 got a backer.
Yes.
So we're actually going to be seeing it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was so silly. Like, apparently they completely finished it, but Paramount didn't want to distribute it anymore.
I don't know what's going on in the higher-ups, but if you got a good product, you know, and people are really liking it, you don't cancel it.
I think it has something to do with, like, tax write-offs.
Probably, but they could have found other ways to, you know. But you know what? I shouldn't say that, because they could have easily have canceled Strange New Worlds or Lower Decks. So they probably figured, okay, since these are pretty much our flagships, what's the one that's not going to cost us too much to cancel?
Yeah, because like you and I both know there's a lot of like things in Hollywood that are made completely finished, ready for air, but never see a release date because it's actually it saves them more money to make it and shelve it than to actually air it.
Yeah.
Like one of the most famous examples was that old Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah. And you could see that in conventions, you know, just appearing up. You even see it appearing in YouTube occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Like it got passed around VHS tapes, like the unreleased movie. Hell, that Deadpool teaser was originally made like that and never saw the light of day. There's a lot of these shows, like that Batgirl movie.
Yeah.
Like that's sitting on a shelf somewhere and never going to see the light of day.
And I'm thinking at some point somebody's going to show it.
Yeah.
They showed Fantastic Four, they'll show this.
Yeah. It'll eventually see the light of day, and then people are going to be like, it's okay.
Yeah, they'll be like, yeah, maybe the studio was right to pull the plug on this.
Yeah. Right. It's one of those like, oh man, build up hype, and then it comes out.
Yeah, then you're like,
it's all right. Like the Snyder Cut.
I actually love the Snyder Cut.
Yeah. No, it's good, but I'm like, did it live up to the hype?
Well, you may not think that, but I actually do think it lived up to the hype, because it did add more, and it was a more serious take, and just the ending itself, you know, with so many Easter eggs that didn't pan out, unfortunately, because, well, the studio being what it being, they screwed it up. So, not our fault. It's them.
Very true. Very true. All right. So, I think, like, we got a good coverage of everything.
I think so.
No, but we're going to talk about it again as soon as, like, the last episode of Lower Decks airs, and then we got to go into that.
I think we should do another episode just to cover the last episode.
I'm fine with that, my friend. I am fine with that.
Okay.
So I think it's a good place to leave off. So we'll leave it here, the Star Trek topic. And next time we'll talk about some personal projects. We'll talk about, you know what? Get a chance to watch it. We'll also talk about the Freddy movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and then like later in December, we could also talk about Archer.
Yes.
All right, then. So this has been Peter.
This has been Ian, and this has been the Nova Files.
So thank you for listening, and you're definitely hearing this after Halloween, so have a happy Halloween, happy Thanksgiving, depending on when this comes out, and for those who are not in the know, and depending on when this comes out, we'll be doing a live episode next month for the Sierra Nova Comics Virtual Comic Con.
Yeah, we're very excited about that. This is our second year doing that. So it's always fun, especially to talk with some of the creators and all that, but also to talk about, you know, just comic things.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, we'll hear from you next time.
So take care, everybody. Have a great time. Signing out.
Good night, folks.